Welcome, everyone, to Maybe Next Year After Dark, as we've just dubbed it. I'm Frank, reporting from my bedroom this evening.
I'm Scott, reporting to you from my luxurious and freezing basement, as always.
And this is Paul, reporting to you from my slightly less luxurious but not as freezing office.
One of these days we're gonna do the video cast for you again, and I'm gonna make everyone do what they're doing now. And you'll see Scott is a talking Wisconsin field, and Paul likes to backlight himself like he's like about to make demands from his terrorism cave. But I like to think of him as like a Hydra terrorist, not like a real
Right.
terrorist. Like
Right.
definitely like,
Yeah,
you
a
know,
comic book terrorist.
absolutely, like, you know, something kind of fun. I don't know.
Like
And
he's
I
gonna
think progressively out this podcast, I'm just going to move this lamp. So I'm going to move it over here now. And
Yeah,
we're
we have
going to
to get
see
you
what
like
this
on the
does.
like the Lord of the Rings set where like everybody's chair was moving as the cameras. Did you ever watch the behind the scenes on the Lord of the Rings?
I
No.
have not. We've got
Okay,
the
let me.
DVDs. I could at
Well,
any moment.
it's the off season, and as longtime fans know, like anything goes in the off season. So we're going to start with a brief discussion of
Yes.
how they worked.
Something that only
So,
Frank has seen.
right. So, you know, like everybody's sort of the same height in real life, but they want the hobbits to stay short when they're like sitting at the table. And there's a very easy trick for that where they sit farther down the table and the camera stands still, and the people you want to be taller are closer to the camera, and you do a little bit of lighting, and boom, it looks like they're across the table from each other, but one of them is shorter. That all falls apart if you start moving the camera and panning it around. So what they did was they built these chairs that were attached to the table that moved with the camera to keep the proportion the same the whole time. It's fascinating. It was so cool. And they like never had done that before in a movie, and like they had developed it so that way they could do these shots where the camera goes around the table, but everybody looks like the same height that they're supposed to stay. So it was really cool. And we could do that, point being, we could do that with this light in Paul's room that no one on the podcast can see because we're only going to put out the audio.
That's actually how the Bills are going to select the front seven in this offseason. They're going to build a table and they're going to see which one of them land in the right chairs for the right framing shot for the discussion that they have in the inside the NFL that is definitely not coming to Buffalo, but regard well, actually it might definitely come to Buffalo this year because Rex Ryan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like
Well,
that just moved us up the chain.
in his interviews, he's been very, and I guess it's a Bills podcast now. In his interviews, he's been very adamant that like he's a guy who's like, the players we have and can get are how we build our defense. He's been very, you know, forthright that he's not going to be slavish to a particular 3-4-4-3 Rex Ryan quote defense. And so I think, you know, depending on whether they keep a guy like Jerry Hughes and how Kiko Alonso's doing, and with the news today of the departure of Keith Rivers. I mean, they're certainly going to mold it a little, but I like that I heard that. And I guess no one else cares.
And Scott, I clearly don't care either way. We're not even going to
Welcome,
bother
everyone, to another episode of Buffalo Bills,
to.
maybe next year, the only podcast that blah
I
blah
think it
blah.
just. I'm gonna jump in with Scott here, and I'm just gonna criticize you for ending that so suddenly. I think we were both waiting for more, and then you're like, "Oh, now he's looking for feedback." And
Yeah,
I know you're the
exactly.
showrunner, so you have the right to do that. But I was just like, "Oh, that was it. Oh, okay."
All right. So
You're like Frank Darabont, and then you go and abandon the show.
well,
No.
okay. So let's just list out the things that we should talk about today, because that always helps me in these very thin days, right? So we've got the Super Bowl recap, right? We've got this
Right.
day in Bills history, which will take longer to list that we're doing it than we'll actually probably take to do it.
Right.
We
We've got the
have
guard in disguise.
the guard in disguise. We have some free agency stuff, and then we have, I guess, the quarterback. But like, the great quarterback, not quarterback story, followed by okay. And then I guess just now to finish up with my Rex Ryan. I don't know how you guys have been listening to any of the interviews with him, but every interview I've heard with him has made me like him more. He is a guy who seems very willing to talk about things and schemes, and he definitely had a conversation on WGR where he was like, "Well, you might remember this play from against you guys where this happened and X, Y, and Z, and I was trying to do this," and he was very forthright, like on the radio, about what he was trying to accomplish and what worked and what didn't, and how the Bills team obviously has these guys that he thinks can work in certain ways. And, you know, he was talking a lot about, you don't, you know, schemes can change from game to game based on the opponent you're trying to do, and you can't do the same thing every week. And more importantly, you can't do the same thing. You can't just go in and say, this is how you win. You have to look and see what you have. And he was talking about it within regards to the defense, but he was also talking about it in regards to the offense. He wasn't so much saying directly, E.J. Manuel is a terrible quarterback, but he was saying there are ways to win football games without having Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, and that's what their path needs to be. And so I kind of like that, that he's sort of being, you know, he's not backing away or saying we've got to get this quarterback thing figured out. He's sort of saying the quarterback position being what it is, we should still be able to find ways to win. And I kind of liked that. I felt like I haven't heard somebody say that, really. Now, if one of you would like to comment any well, of that, add to it, please do.
That's an excellent intro, Frank, and yes. I will briefly say that that's correct. I agree with Rex Ryan. The end. Paul?
No, I was going to say, I was not going to be as brief, so I'm glad you have more.
I think that's what we've been kind of talking about a couple weeks ago. We were talking about whether or not he's going to be cutting, you know, someone like Jerry Hughes, who maybe doesn't quite fit the 3-4 scheme that he's been more accustomed to run during his time, or whether he will, in fact, do what he says he's going to do, which is fit the scheme to the players rather than vice versa. I think, obviously, quarterbacks, again, like we've always said, is the most important position, and it's very difficult to consistently be good without one. So, but at the same time, I agree that he should be trying to find a way to do that because that's his job. He can't just blame it on the fact that he has a crappy quarterback and move on, because that's not really what we're paying any of the quarterbacks for or any of the coaches for. But
I'm not taking cues correctly, so I'm just going to keep shutting up and listening to Scott's very valid points.
That was a pregnant pause. You had a right to jump in there, but I'm going to continue to blaze on. Even though I don't really have any more points to make, I think I did lose my train of thought a little bit, and then I'm gonna I'll start setting up the vamping now so that Paul can get his thoughts together, and then I'll slowly end by saying, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that sounds about right. What do you think, Paul?
Oh, I think that's excellent. By the way, you now have right to jump in whenever you remember what it is that I destroyed your train of thought on. we can look at, let's remember, Bill Belichick won 11 games with Matt Castle as his quarterback back in 2008. So you can win games without having that franchise quarterback. Can you win a Super Bowl is a whole other discussion. But let's face it, none of us are hoping for, I mean, it would be great to have a Bills Super Bowl win next year, but it's not going to happen. We do have some pieces in place on the defense. If you looked at Pro Football Focus, put out a great chart on where the Bills have good, very good, elite, average, below average players, etc. down the line. And you look at that defense, you still have two guys listed as elite, some guys listed good and very good. Offense needs a lot of help. You started with Incognito. You've got some, which we'll get into later. We'll get some other pieces in place around him. And then you do need to find that, whether it's the term that people are using is bridge quarterback to help win games, or you give Manuel that opportunity to go in there, assuming he shows development, assuming what he was doing on the practice field, that it was impressing Marone, or allegedly impressing Marone, can also impress Ryan. And then from there, you kind of build and see how the team is going. You are going to need some help at running back. We all love Fred, but he's coming toward the end of the line. You might not re-sign CJ. Are you willing to take a chance at, I want to call him Bobby Brown. Help me out. Bryce Brown. There you go. Assuming that he becomes a feature type guy. But I think you need some help there. There should be 10 guys in this draft who can do that. So I think, you know, they need, I agree with Rex Ryan, and I do really like him. He's met my off-season expectations so far. But let's see them go ahead and build, get some players on that offense so that you aren't dependent on a franchise quarterback type.
Okay.
And scene.
Did you guys watch SNL 40?
Yes. I watched bits and pieces of it. I saw you were live tweeting it. So whenever you live tweet something interesting, I'm like, oh, I kind of want to see that. What was I distracted by that I was watching? I think it was the Saber game. No, Sabers weren't on that.
There was a Sabers game.
Walking Dead was on. That was it. So I was kind of going back and forth.
We saved Walking Dead for last night. So we watched SNL 40, and I commend it unto anybody who likes to laugh, I guess, or really anybody who's an SNL fan, because there was definitely parts where it wasn't as funny as other things, but it was everything in there was kind of necessary and great. So
I agree. I thought that was really pretty well done from top to bottom. I thought the auditions were like the best part. Like I cannot. It's weird to see them all so young and but that's the other thing too. It also makes me feel kind of like taken by a couple of them when it was like Dana Carvey was doing Chopping Broccoli as like his audition.
As an audition.
And yeah. No, and they've ever since.
Well, that's how they do it. They bring those, like, if you want to get famous, like, all those guys, like, they almost all wrote their own, like, big star sketches. Like, the things
Look at Will Ferrell and Get Off the Shed when they showed his audition.
That was pretty funny. That is a classic, yes.
Yeah. So let's see. So we just went through Ryan, the Richie Incognito. Remember when he was just we signed him like 3 years ago, and he was just like one of the dirtiest players in the NFL, and he wasn't the face of bullying, and like basically just short of like a date rapist. I mean, I don't know. He was his rep. Definitely, a lot of people were upset that the Bills signed him. I think all of that is going to kind of go away when the season starts. But it was a interesting process in that the Pegulas went out of their way to interview him and then issue a statement on him, which is probably the right way to go. They sort of sat down with him. I think when you're talking about a guy who is, you know, basically was blackballed for a year in the NFL, you sort of owe it to your fans and the public to sort of do a bit of extra due diligence on the situation. If he's anything like he was the last couple of years, though, he instantly becomes the best, you know, right guard on the team, and one of the best linemen on the team. Do you guys have any, Paul? Do you have any thoughts or feelings? Or
well, yeah, right. Remember his last full season, he was a Pro Bowl player back in 2012.
Right.
So he's got the ability now. Is he in shape? Is he fit? And again, the question we're all asking, which you know. He's got a short leash, you know. How short is his leash? You know, he's got to make sure he can behave himself, and make an impact on this team. Because let's face it, if he's not, very low risk for the Bills to release him with the contract that they gave him. They will take $100,000 against the cap if they release him, and that's it, which they'll be more than willing to take. So this is his chance, and it's a 1-year contract, which will be kind of along the same lines as what you give to, Brandon Spikes. Like, all right, coming in. Prove yourself, and if you shine, you know, we'll look into another contract, or at the very least, you'll give yourself an opportunity to sign for bigger money elsewhere. And if you don't, then you're on your way out with a little damage to the team. So with the shambles that this offensive line is in, you know, the potential sexual assault concerns bother me a little more than the bullying bothers me. He has not murdered dogs, so I'm a little more okay with it from that perspective. But yeah, I'm a fan of the signing because, again, they can... Very low risk, and if he gets into trouble, then he's no longer a Bill. Simple as that.
Agreed. I think Scott. I think from my perspective, it's a really kind of a brilliant signing, and I got to hand it to someone other than Doug Whaley because I refuse to give Doug Whaley any credit for anything. But I think at the same time, it's a good signing. I think he can be. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely one of the best linemen on the team automatically just by showing up. I think especially I agree with the points about Pegulas needing to kind of take this proactively. The blood is kind of in the water on the NFL right now for the media and for the public in general. So any kind of scandal that they can try and spin into something, they will absolutely try and do that. So you have to kind of get ahead of these things. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he does stupid shit, then he's off the team. Like, it's not too much risk. And I think the other good thing is, you know, a year buys us a lot here because we can find out, you know, what's going on with Kwanjo. We can find out what's going on with Richardson. And if either of those two guys are salvageable in their sophomore seasons. Because if not, then you got to cut them both, and you know we're going back to the draft or back to free agency next year. I will say this: we still have to get another guard, a starting guard, because from my perspective, Pierce is terrible. Like, okay, so he's gone now. Urbick, honestly, like again, Wisconsin guy, but he's kind of if he's your
he shouldn't be a starter. I don't mind him on the roster.
Exactly. He should not be a starter. And so and the other thing is if you're going to carry him, Richardson, and Kwanjo as your backups, you're kind of in trouble even if Incognito is your starter, especially if Incognito is your starter because you have all the off the field issues with him. But I still think you have to go out and get Mikey Potty or one of those guys or Dan Connolly because honestly, like, again, it's even better because now you've saved, like you really had troubles at both guard spots. You may have filled one of those at a discount rate for this year, so you might as well take some of that money that you saved and go invest it on the other side, and so that at least one side is a lot more solid. And again, I think you could get that with Ayipati. And I understand he's a guard, but I mean, guys are guards are making money in this league. I get that, but it's you got a offensive line and quarterback, six guys who are always on the field. We've talked about this before. You got to invest the money there. So.
Yep.
Yeah, they.
I did want to make a comparison. I forgot, and then I'll shut up. Kind of like Barry Zito being signed by the A's to a minor league deal. That's how I view this signing. I will shut up now.
Or Dan Uglib. Yeah, Dan Uglib being signed by the Nats to a minor league deal. Does it, like, you know, only potential upside to happen, really. Except there, you know, and just to.
Unless he punches out Eric Wood, in which case.
Right.
Then we have a problem.
Well, that's the other thing. Like with the Dolphins, you don't know what was going. At least with the locker room stuff, maybe if you have a stronger presence in the locker room, that doesn't exact. Maybe somebody should have been telling him to knock. Like he should maybe not have been one of the guys in a leadership role. And you know, with Scott's right that the blood is in the water with regards to scandal in the NFL and the media. And some of this is very. I just only wanted to say like it's deservedly so. Like if Richie Incognito did some of the sexual assault stuff that he's been accused of, which it sounds like there's not really much of an argument whether he did or didn't, like, that's pretty despicable stuff. So, like, he needs to be a better person. But if he's going to be a better person anyway, we might as well have him on the football team while he's learning or acting as a better person. So, good for the Pegulas for at least, you know, and it's nice that Kim, a woman, is an actual owner who, you know, was probably involved in the interview process and got to put in and say whether she felt comfortable hiring somebody who's had, you know, this type of trouble in the past on the team. So, I don't know. It gets a seal of approval for me until Richie Incognito does something stupid. And then even if he does something stupid and they cut him, oh, well, like, you know, like, it still gets a seal of approval for me because they tried and it's not their fault that this guy was a jerk. Plenty of stuff left to do on the line, though, as you said. I'm looking at the Pro Football Focus color-coded depth chart, and they have four players.
Yeah, that was what I was talking about earlier. That was kind of helpful. Thank you, Pro Football Focus.
Yeah, it's nice. It's color-coded. Chris Williams, Sean Chell Henderson, Bakari Rambo, and EJ Manuel are all the poor starters on the team. So let's see. So there wasn't as many movement on Jerry Hughes yet. There hasn't been any movement on Tenora Searcy, who might also get a lot of money on the free agency market. No word on CJ, of course.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, CJ Spiller doesn't even warrant articles. Like, there's no articles about why aren't we talking to CJ. It's like everybody's focused on
They've checked out on Hughes. CJ. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the people, you know, you'd be hearing more from the team and other outlets if the scuttlebutt was like I believe that's because everybody already knows that CJ's going and there's no real reason to kind of beat your head over it. He's not coming back. Okay, so that's sad.
That's way to bring down the party.
I don't know what to tell you. Like it's still before free agency starts, so it's kind of hard re-signing these guys.
You can't even really have, like, the CJ post-mortem kind of what did we get out of this kind of conversation until he's officially cut. So it's,
right,
or
exactly.
Until officially he's not coming back. So.
Well, here, you know what? Keith Rivers was officially cut today. Let's do the Keith Rivers post-mortem.
Yes.
Keith Rivers was a four-down back, at least according to one GM in the Buffalo Bills front office.
and Scott will mention him by name this time.
Yeah, he was certainly he was certainly serviceable, but not good. And so he's gone, which I think is a nice thing because, you know, Kiko Alonso's coming back, and Jerry Hughes is, well, he's more of a defensive lineman. So I, but
Alonzo, Bradham, and Brown, there's no reason to keep Rivers at a starting salary. I mean, it's Rivers, yeah, I mean, he's done some okay things for us, but again, he's always been just a guy. I think he was just a guy when we signed him, and now he's 2 years older and still just a guy. So, you know, best wishes, go forward and play special teams somewhere, or you know, help out some other team that needs, you know, a four down backer and has no good linebackers, because we have plenty and you're not one of them. Sorry, Keith.
Yep, not really a bad signing to begin with. I mean, he just happened to be replaced by better, cheaper players who did a better job than he did. So he costs you $500K against the cap this year. You save yourself $1.7K, and you know, he ends up being that kind of that person that someone is dated briefly between relationships. Like, all right, we'll try a little Keith Rivers in this situation, and then they're like, you know, I've enjoyed Keith. But I've just found this amazing person named Preston Brown, and I would be foolish not to pursue this. So I think this is what the Bills are doing. You know, and I commend the move, and I do wish luck to Keith Rivers, except for that awful play against Houston where all he had to do was touch a guy down short of the third down of the first down marker. Instead, let him roll for a first down. That will unfortunately be my lingering memory of him. But otherwise, he was a guy, and good. Thanks for filling in while you could, and best of luck to you.
Nothing personal.
How about we reflect on the fact that when we started this podcast 3 years ago, the sentence "Buffalo Bills linebacking core position of strength" would have been laughed out of the room, more or less. And
we're talking about the Calvin Shepard era, there.
Yeah, and we're talking about Keith Rivers, you know, letting go of guys who aren't good enough, which is kind of a strange phenomena around these parts.
Yeah, Keith Rivers, a first-round pick, you know, not that long ago, back in 2008, so.
Yeah, no, first-round pick?
Ninth overall pick in the NFL draft in 2008.
That's a whiff for someone.
Yeah, the Bengals.
There you go, right there.
Yeah, we had plenty of first-round, I mean, old what's-his-name from Penn State.
Aaron Maben.
Aaron, thank you. That guy, oh my God, he was so bad. He's like so bad he's forgettable. He's not even Mike Williams bad. It was just like, get off of my plate. What the hell? All right.
The Bills draft pick, in case you were wondering, was Leotis McCalvin that year. So a better pick.
Yes, definitely. Josh McCowan came
still
and left.
Catastrophic results, I will say that. Occasionally. Sorry.
Okay. No, it's fine. All I'm going to do is talk about Josh McCown. So, you know, that's the level of attention he deserves. He came to Buffalo. He left Buffalo. He did not sign a contract. He may yet sign a contract. I don't know that he's, you know, in demand. So the talk on the radio in Buffalo has kind of gone one of two ways. It's been, you know, well, that's all fine and good, but we're not going to do anything unless we fix the quarterback. And then the other side of that conversation is, why can't they fix the quarterback? And then the third part of that conversation is, there are no quarterbacks. And so it's gotten to a frustrating level for me, because on the one hand, if you look at the free agents that are available for quarterback, there are none. They're all arguably EJ Manuel. And if you look at the draft and where they're going to draft, there's no one that can help you today for the Buffalo Bills at quarterback. And so why are we obsessing about this thing that we can't do anything about? Do I care if Josh McCown signs his bill or not? Not really. He's interchangeable with like 10 other guys right now, as far as I'm concerned. And we can talk about how Jake Locker might have a little bit more upside, I guess. But I don't know. I don't care. Like, they're all kind of... Get two of them in here and do what you can. Like, that's going to be my attitude here. Does anybody have a different attitude, or am I being like foolish or what?
No, I mean, I think we're all frustrated. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, is that, like, again, and I don't want to, you know, it's more than just Doug Whaley fucked up, but it is a little bit of that. Just because.
Yeah, burn him.
Because, you know, this is the situation we put ourselves last year, and he was the one who was, he and the staff were convinced that we were one wide receiver, we were one excellent wide receiver away from where we needed to be. And I think that was clearly a mistaken assumption. And I think that this is where that comes to hurt us. Now, yes, we would not be in a position to draft one of the top tier, you know, it's a very shallow quarterback here, we get that. But at the same time, like, EJ Manuel was also their pick as well, in a very shallow quarterback year as well. And they, they traded down, and they still got their guy, but at the same time, like, if you're getting a guy who's not going to take you there, then it doesn't really matter that you got a good deal on him. It's like you got a good deal on a piece of crap. Like, it doesn't help you at all.
Right. So I mean, a turd's still a turd, even if it's free.
Exactly. Yes.
Look, if you want me to shit in a box and mark it guaranteed, I will. I've got extra time. But if you want to buy a quality part,
for your sake, for your daughter's sake, why don't buy a quality part for me? I was waiting for someone to make that. I was going down that road. But yeah, no. So you know, yeah, we're screwed. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Frank. I mean, get some of these young guys in here. Get Ryan Mallett in here. Get Colt McCoy in here. Get, I'm looking at the list, Jake Locker, if you want. Like, throw some lines in the water. See if any of these fish bite. You know, what do you want? Run some flags.
That's what I'm saying. If you're going to sign two terrible quarterbacks, sign six terrible quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Just get them all in here and see what they can do. You know, and pick the three that suck the least. Because, like, it doesn't matter.
This has turned into a very sad discussion now.
Well, it's only a sad discussion because, like, at some point, right, in a normal conversation, and I understand that, like, sports writing and sports radio on some level can't be a normal conversation, but in a normal conversation, you would tell whoever you're talking to, like this is, like, obsessing over this, like, a girl that's left you and, like, your friend can't get out of the funk, right? We've all been that guy and we've all known that guy. Okay, and at some point you just want to hit your fucking friend in the head and say, like, whatever you're doing, it's not helping. You can sit here forever, and all you're worrying about the quarterback position isn't going to help the quarterback position. There is nothing to be done, right? Like, it is the Zen moment now. There is, like, you need to let this go because it is fully out of everyone's control. And when there's something that can be done about it, something will be done about it. But nothing can be done about it today. So, by all means, like, your options are to just sign a couple of guys or sign... I don't even know if there's rules against how many guys you're allowed to sign. Like, if you can bring in, like, 10 of them, bring in 10 of them and let them, you know, just go for it. See what the hell happens. But...
Yeah. Go ahead, Frank. Finish your point.
I'm sorry. I can't listen to one more person, first of all, be angry at the Bills about the fact that they can't fix it this year. Scott brings up the only legitimate concern is, like, this is all a matter of, you know, terrible foresight on the hand by the front office that they don't have backups already in place and didn't plan better going into it. But, like, if you're just going to sit here in this singular moment and insist that something be done, I mean, sit on your thumb, man, because it's, like, nothing's going to happen. Like, it's just, like, I can't do that, right? You know? There's nothing.
No, I agree. I think the one thing I'll say is, I think just on the feasibility part of it, I know this is a bit of a rant, and so we're all enjoying it, and that's fun. I know, like, the issue is that obviously for the coaches, they can really, I mean, there's a limit to how many guys they can watch and practice and mm-hmm. how many receivers who know the playbook to be able to run these guys through their paces. So there's a finite amount of reps and practice time that they can do to evaluate quarterbacks, and that's why it's frustrating because, yeah, it would be great if you could bring in, like, four or five of these guys and really, like, put them all through their paces, but the CBA, and I think it doesn't work like that, and plus the coaches would
right. be nuts.
But I think the other thing is just from a longer-term perspective is that, or more philosophical perspective, I think it's really just that the NFL, and to a certain extent, both the media and the NFL have put so much importance on the quarterback. Again, some of it undeservedly so, but at the same time, it is the mm-hmm. most important position. It's the most scrutinized position. It's the position that people can easily discuss the merits and the flaws successfully without having to go to Pro Football Focus's kind of, you know, letter grades and go through, you know, oh, well, you know, Mike Iupati graded out at a +8 last year, which is way better than Eric Pierce's minus five, so we got to get him in here. You know, and it's worth $49 million to do it. Like, nobody enjoys those discussions on talk radio. And also, Frank, you're zooling, I think, a little bit. Paul, is he zooling?
Okay. Yeah, there's some zooling action going on there. But not... Oh, yeah, now he's really zooling. Now he's super zooling. I'd say Frank gets the hell out of here and then comes back. Well, after I finish my ramble, and then I think we're probably... Is that how we worked this last time?
Yes. You keep talking, and then Frank comes back.
All right. There goes Frank. I see he's dropped off. I would agree with the approach on the quarterback. You're right. There is going to be a limited number of reps that they're going to be able to see in practice. So I agree with Frank's point, at least, like, sign what you can when you can. So if you sign 10 and you cut 5 of them before you even go to minicamp, that's fine. You know, keep the ones in minicamp who demonstrate the best raw physical tools, and then cut bait with the others. But they're going to have to try to find a diamond in the rough. You're right. We don't look at Pro Football Focus to, you know, judge the quarterback position like we do other positions, you know, because it's, you know, even with wide receivers, we see the great catches they make. We might not see how they're doing in run blocking. We might not see how they're doing in drawing coverage away from other receivers and those types of things. Quarterbacks, we observe. And we've observed the Bills quarterback situation to be, you know, not a great one. So I'm definitely interested in, you know, having them bring people in, get a second or third round pick. See if you can trade for, you know, maybe not trade for a Jay Cutler type, obviously, but trade for someone who, you know, and maybe a Nick Folk type. You know, there are options out there that I think this team is fully capable of exploring, that I would like to see them, you know, explore going down the line, because even though we talked about what Rex said earlier, like, you can build around the quarterback, you don't necessarily need that great quarterback. Eventually, if you want to get to the level of, you know, winning Super Bowls, you're going to need that great quarterback. There's a reason Tom Brady has, you know, 4 Super Bowl titles. It's not because the team around him has always been amazing. It's because of him. And, you know, Peyton Manning has won 3 conference championships. Same type of deal right there, and 1 Super Bowl. You know, that's the type of guy you need behind center to really make a difference here. Now I pretty much finished my point, but oh no, he's coming back.
Oh, he is? Okay,
there
good.
He is.
Very good.
Okay, sorry. Am I better now?
Yes, you are.
Yeah. Okay. You are Zool free, and I had just finished my point.
Okay, I disagree with everything you said then. I didn't even hear it, but I'm sure it's wonderful. When I listen back on the podcast, I'll do it. Okay. I still have anger over the quarterback discussion, and I probably will for a while. I don't know.
Because I will sign Jim Kelly again. I will also be angry.
It's not that I don't agree we need a better quarterback. It's just like, you know, like, there's just, like, there's no catch-up today. I don't know what to tell you. Like, you can complain all you want, sir, but you go to a different McDonald's, but there is no catch-up in our store today, and I know that's ridiculous, but, like, I can't make catch-up. So, and I don't think taking a flyer on a fourth, like, you know, some people are floating the idea, like, you have to draft a fourth-round quarterback and hope he works. Like, that's like a gambler who's, like, lost the last 5 horse races and is like, well, I better put all my money in on the 6th race and pick the long shot specifically so I can make up all the money I lost as far as, I, like, you know, like, somebody's like, well, this 100-to-1 horse, if I hit it, like, you know, ugh, okay.
Save your money. I mean, to be fair, like, that also it does happen sometimes, and it does.
But, like, you don't have to do that. Like, you.
No, I
you
agree. Know. It's dumb to expect that that's going to work. That's the thing.
Like, if they do that and it doesn't work, like, you can't get mad at them for then trying to get it right. Like, it's not like they have to make it work. There might be no way to make it work this year. So,
and that's fair too. You can make multiple investments. Say it's like, you know, betting on the Super Bowl at the beginning of it right now and saying, I'm going to put $1,000 on the Bills to win it all and $1,000 on the Seahawks to win it all. You can bet multiple teams like that. And, you know, you bet with the one that you hope works out, and then you bet the one that might have a better chance of working out for whatever reason.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think the biggest question for me with the quarterback right now is it worth it to try and go get someone like Nick Foles or someone else who is under contract on another team but who might be available for the right trade value and try and fix it with an actual kind of guy who has started some in the league. And I bring up Foles because I know that he was rumored to be involved with a Josh Gordon trade earlier. Obviously, you know, there's probably another backup or two out there who's available if you were looking in the right places. But, I mean, and that's the thing is, then you were actually not talking about, well, we're going to take a fifth-round flyer and we're going to sign some free agents, because those are essentially no-risk options. Like, a fifth-round pick's not going to mean a lot one way or another unless he happens to be Tom Brady or the next Tom Brady or whatever. Right. Same with, like, free agents. That's just money, which NFL teams have plenty of. When you start trading existing assets and start trading second- and third-round picks to get someone who you think is an upgrade, then that's really when you're putting your money on the line. And that's when I stop being able to trust Doug Whaley, because I don't think he knows what the hell he's doing. But so that's why I'm not quite in favor of that plan. But I guess that also might just be me.
I'm nodding. That's my take on it.
I'm shaking my head, actually. No, I'm
Well, you just never know. You don't know who the next Tom Brady is, right? Like, so,
yeah.
Good luck.
Okay. If we did, he sure as hell wouldn't go in the sixth round, you know? Exactly. He would go in the first pick.
It's like people who say, why don't we trade this terrible player and get some good players in here? It is like that in the sense that it's fantasy. It's like there's a reason there are terrible players, because you can't get anybody good for them. There's a reason why guys go in the sixth and seventh round, because nobody believes in them. And that's why they call it the exception to the rule, right? That's why Tom Brady was the exception to the rule, not the rule.
Right. So unless we have our hot tub time machine, we're not solving this problem easily.
Right. Speaking of stupid Tom Brady and his stupid fucking bullshit win, congratulations to the Patriots.
Yeah, I'll say congrats to them. Let's face it, the reason we as Bills fans tend to hate the Patriots is because they're consistently the best. They are the standard. That we were in the late 80s and early 90s. And you know what? I can hate them for it, but you know what? They're successful, and they've earned their success. That's the bottom line.
By cheating and getting lucky with a six-round pick. I agree,
and
Paul.
By 100%. By that guy throwing the dumbest play in the universe ever.
Should we go into do it now, since we did have a little, we did actually prepare for this podcast, which people might not expect based on the end product, but you know, we did talk about this beforehand, whereas I'm the only one here, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but the only one who was okay with that play call.
I definitely was not okay with that play call.
I was not okay with it. I was going to ask the group, and clearly I'm asking Frank, if I may paraphrase the great Stephen Colbert, bad call or the worst call?
Right. I think it's got to be very bad call. It might not be the worst call, but it's like the second to worst call if it's not the worst call. It just I don't even mind that they passed, right? Because we were in the room, and Scott's wife definitely, like, about a half second before the ball snapped, started saying the sentence, "Whatever you do, just don't pass it." She and like as she said, "Don't pass it." The play had started, and it was a pass, and everybody kind of froze, including apparently half of the Seattle defense, or New England deep, whatever.
The Seattle offense.
Right. I sort of understand the idea that you want to catch people off guard, and there was some stuff with the time and the minutes and the timeouts, and like you're hoping to throw the ball away, or rather that like if you get an incomplete pass, now you're open on third down. I guess I understand it, but you know, a fade route to the corner, a play action pass to a tight end, like 1,000 other types of pass other than throwing the ball directly into the highest traffic area of the field, when there was no need to. You had them on the ropes. My problem was that Seattle sort of panicked and chose what felt to me like a panic play. Like they had to get it right then, right that second, as much as Pete Carroll says that he didn't think that and he was trying to do the exact opposite. It seems ridiculous to me because that play was directed towards and having a result. It's in the middle of the field. It's a crossing pattern in front of a bunch of guys. I mean, you're asking for trouble, and it especially in a place where you could have done a bunch of plays that wouldn't have asked for trouble, with two guys who can run and, you know, a basically a tired Patriots defense. I think it was a terrible decision. I don't know. I thought it was the worst decision of the ones he could have made.
All right, Paul, why don't you go next, and then I'll clear up.
I would love to. I'm actually going to try a different approach in my argument, which is fact. So this that's what I'm going to do here. Ooh, zing.
On the throne.
All right.
Oh,
so,
muted. Sorry, I can't hear you, Paul. What?
I've shown the light on myself now. I want to be seen for this.
Oh, the metaphor is complete. All right, here we go.
So NFL passes from the 1 yard line this season, 106. Turnovers, 0. So all season, they 106 passes from the 1, no turnovers. Marshawn Lynch from the 1 yard line this year, 5 carries, 1 touchdown.
Writing a little something down here. Go ahead.
All right, yes. I'll do this, and then you can throw it right back at me. Marshawn Lynch from the 1 yard line, 2012 to 2014, 5 touchdowns on 12 rushes. So, you know, the numbers here actually show a pass is – this is what you're doing. It's second down. It's from the 1 yard line. You're taking it – it's over 0 out of 103 times this year did anyone intercept it. You are depending on a rookie cornerback who has no career interceptions to get a jump on the pass, make a great play, out-physical your physical receiver, and come up with the interception. The odds of that are exceedingly low, but that's exactly what happened. And the only person I look at on that play with any feeling of either commendation or scorn would be Malcolm Butler, with commendation for just stepping up and making that play, because you know, the odds of an interception there or any turnover are extremely, extremely low. It's only second down. You've got 2 more tries with Lynch. You've still got a timeout in your back pocket. I was totally okay with that call. I don't think any team should be lambasted for not doing what might seem obvious. So, and end of rant. So now I'll let you guys destroy me.
Okay. I want a quick rebuttal, and then I'll let Scott
go
ahead. I'd have to say that 106 times is a, as we say in the baseball world, a small sample size, even though it's a lot of plays for maybe an NFL season over, I don't know, 16, well, it'd be 16 games a week times 16 weeks would be a lot of plays that, you know, so it's a kind of small sample size.
I was going to add to your argument.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't know how many of those were that type of pass. Like,
right.
If 103 pass plays, if 87 of them were like fade routes or play action passes, okay, maybe that's why, right? Because they're in my mind less prone to mistake making, or as you say, and I don't mean to take it away, the guy made a great play. Like, they're less prone to that type of play. As exceedingly small as it seems like there were even smaller risks one might have taken. So I'll leave it there. But your point is well made, even if it doesn't convince me. Scott, tiebreaker.
All right. So I have seen that stat thrown around, the both stats that Paul has talked about. And the problem is that the New England Patriots goal line defense, their short yardage defense, was amongst the worst running defenses in the league. Like, if you looked at their ability to stop
people. I will support Scott on that argument. Pat's defense had 5 rushes against from the 1 yard line, allowed 4 touchdowns, including to Booby Dixon in the last week.
Yeah. Booby. So, which you probably should just not count because it was a garbage.
For 3 out of 4.
Right. But still, exactly. Again, and you could say small sample size on that one too, but I would also say that it is, to me, a thing of, and this is something that you think about, we all do it, and I think there's a certain amount of it that needs to be done that an NFL coach needs to do, which is we have to think about this in the scope of 4 plays. We have 4 plays to get into the end zone. But that's the thing is, like, shouldn't you, I mean, to a certain extent, run whatever you think is going to get you into the end zone the best, like, every time, to the extent that you don't end up running the same play every time? I mean, I think if I was going to run my best play, I would want to run it the first time because exactly what happens, stupid shit happens. And I will say that, yeah, it's possible that the only way that was going to happen was Malcolm Butler makes an unbelievable play, but I'd also say it's just as likely that Russell Wilson has the ball batted down. He's pretty good at not having it batted down, but it does happen, and if it gets batted up into the air, it's just as easily an interception the way the game, given that all the tight space is there. And I think especially the play call amongst the play calls, you know, again, like Frank Action said, a play action, you know, a run pass option, you know, bootleg thing, a fade route. I mean, there's other, you know, those out routes that Tom Brady throws all the time. You know, again, like the Seahawks run the slants a lot. They like that play. Browner also made a really good play to stand up that wide receiver. I think it was Curse at the line to make sure that he couldn't get off and separate and so allow Wilson a clearer view of exactly what was happening. But at the same time, I feel like that was that play call. And I will also say that on that whole second half, it also comes down to timeouts. Because they blew basically two timeouts, one on the magical, unbelievable catch, which obviously ended up counting for basically nothing. And that one is a little understandable because everyone's hyped up and trying to figure it out. You think the refs are going to stop it, but they don't. But at the same time, they also burned a timeout on a completely, a big play earlier in the drive, but not a game-altering one that required this huge, this incredibly important timeout to be taken right there, and that ends up with you kind of not being able to think through things a little bit at the end of the game. And I think, obviously, yeah, I feel like it was not the worst call, but I think it was a bad call, and I think they will regret calling it, whether they admit it or not.
Yeah, I mean, they'll regret calling. Of course, let's face it. Honestly, it's easy to regret things that you've done that didn't work out. It's kind of circular argument there. But I definitely understand where you're coming from with that point of view as well. I still stand by the fact that the odds of what happening were extremely low, and Lynch is not exactly money from the one. What did you have to lose? Mm-hmm. Trying it. You had the worst thing possible that could have happened, happened, and it didn't happen at all in the 2014 season. Hilariously, I think I was going to point out, I think our memories of this are biased because since 2012 to 2014, there have been 328 passes from the 1 yard line and 6 fumbles and interceptions, 2 of which were the Bills. So maybe we just think this happens more than it actually does. Right. On the football we are.
Yeah, we're skewing the results.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. All right. Paul, could you do our the Stan Bills history? I think we're kind of winding
down. Yeah, we're winding down.
I mean,
here.
Not winding down. We're hot, but there's not much left.
Right. So I think there's a joke to be made in there, but I'll just let it go. So I scoured the earth. I literally went to a bunch of different sites and I found one Bills related thing that happened today. And I found on a site that lists everything from, and to give you an idea, February is a slow month, yes, but not always. February 22nd, 1985, Bills agree to terms with Bruce Smith. February 24th, 1965, Bills trade Cookie Gilchrist to Denver. February 15th, 1979, Bills form a scouting combine. So stuff happens during the month of February. What happened on this day? The quiz, this former Bill was named a Raiders assistant head coach on this day, February 17th, 1993. Who is this former Bill?
All right, former Bill. So not a current Bill. That's helpful. What year was it?
1993, 22 years ago.
22 years ago. Scott,
you said it was the Raiders?
I don't really have a guess for this.
It was the Raiders, yes.
Okay, all right. So want me to take the lead on this one, Frank?
I think you should. I think I'm going to pass on it this week, and I'll let you, unless your answer inspires me.
Okay, so I think what I think it is, because it was 1993, and it was going to the Raiders, and I'm not 100% sure on this, because, again, it is the offseason, so I'm a little rusty. But I will say that I think... See, that's the thing, and it was funny that he said the Raiders, because, if he had said, at the time, the Oilers were still in existence, correct?
They were, yeah. They were
exactly. Just so I think the guy, the former Bill who got signed by the Oilers was Robert Horry. Of course, longtime NBA great Robert Horry, Big Shot Rob, as they all often called him, but little did you know, also a Bills player who went on to be a coach with the Oilers. But because it was the Raiders in 93, that made me think more about it, and that's why I came up with Tecumseh, the Native American leader, the Shawnee, who died in 1813. Yeah, I know, Frank. You knew it. I just needed. It's one of those
Damn
things.
It.
You know, as soon as I said it, you remembered it. You know, because you guys remember in the War of 1812, Tecumseh allied with the British, and then after the U.S. Navy took control of Lake Erie, the Native Americans, the British retreated, and then Tecumseh died at the Battle of the Thames, and then that was pretty much it. But then only later was he reincarnated through the Shawnee, tribal reincarnation, and then came back to again star for the Bills in the 70s and 80s, and then go on to coach the Raiders in 93. And, still living this day, actually. He retired from coaching a couple years ago, but, still likes his English tea, you know? Bet you didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, it was him or Sir Walter Raleigh. I got hung up, so...
That makes sense, too. Again, Sir Walter Raleigh did go on, was former Bills player, did go on to coach an AFC team, but again, you got the wrong one, because again, Sir Walter Raleigh went to the Broncos in 93,
right.
And again, not the Raiders.
Yeah, that's right. It was, yeah.
And remember,
go ahead.
Just general Tecumseh history, of course, he should be at the top of all of our minds as Cheers fans, because there was a giant statue of him at the entrance of the Cheers bar on the TV show.
Indeed.
Yeah,
confusing because he was a Bill and then when was a Raider, doesn't really have any sort of like tie to the Patriots. So
in fact, he's very anti,
other than I guess,
because he again fought against America in the War of 1812. I don't know if that's some sort of the bar at Cheers or the people who kind of came up with that show kind of is that some sort of weird kind of reverse jinx or something? I don't know.
Yeah, he also starred in the porn Beaver Wars. Oh, no, wait, no, I'm sorry. He participated in the Beaver Wars. Or no, the 17th century Beaver Wars, and then he settled with the Iroquois. Okay, never mind. I misinterpreted what I read there. So, my apologies.
All right. Was that the right answer, Scott? Or I'm sorry, Paul? Or was there a different answer or a answer that you would have given?
There, you can say that as an answer. He was, Tecumseh did become an assistant linebackers coach, so that technically the answer is technically not wrong. I was thinking more of Jim Haslett, though, when I asked the questions.
Jim Haslett. Okay. Interesting. So, all right.
Not a bad guess, though. And we all remember, I've learned more about Tecumseh on this Wikipedia page than I knew in my previous 30-odd years of living.
He has a Wikipedia page?
He does? Oh, it's huge.
Oh, I didn't know.
It's like bigger than January Jones' Wikipedia page. It's crazy. Why did I mention January Jones, by the way? Why on earth would that be the one to...
Why would you mention her? Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, I think you got a lot to answer there, pal. Yeah, look at him. 8, 9, 10, 11 sections.
An important figure in American history.
His father was Puckshanaw, meaning a lights from flying, something that drops, I light from flying, also known as Puckshanaw, Puckshinwa, Puckshinya. Yeah, he like... Puksanahi, a minor Shawnee war chief of the Kispoko, the dancing tail or the panther.
I think we're going to get an explicit language tag on iTunes. I think some of those words were curses.
Well,
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Or at least incredibly insensitive to Native Americans. I don't. I've done
just
something terrible. Yes, precisely. Yeah. Hopefully the answer next week will be Quetzalcoatl,
Oh, no, I think I already picked him, didn't I?
Didn't
he was an answer to a trivia question several years ago.
I feel like he's, a demigod or an actual god, so he could be the answer to more than one question. But he's one of my
favorites. Either that or Montezuma. It was someone who, Quetzalcoatl was the god. Montezuma was the guy. I'm trying to remember what the question was that Paul answered, or Paul asked, and that...
Oh, no, it's right here. It's which Buffalo Bill... Quetzalcoatl was the Buffalo Bill that ran for 100-yard rushing games in a row with at least 3 touchdowns in each of those games. I think that was the question.
Huh.
I mean,
that's
right at the
top. Then.
It's right at the top of his Wikipedia page, so...
Yes, good job, Quetzalcoatl.
Do we have anything else, or should we invite our audience to... leave
I think we're done. I ain't got shit, as a great man once said.
Yeah, so it was we didn't get to revel in a Seattle Seahawks victory, Well, you know what? And it turns out that Beast Mode might retire this year. He's kicking it around. Who knows? So it's been kind of a rough couple of weeks. We've been a lot of snow here in D.C. Our brains aren't quite working right because we're without football. But it's going to come back. I think once free, you know, we got the combine starting tomorrow morning, or really, I think even today, some people started showing up. Next couple of episodes, there'll be free agency. There'll be better draft prognostication available. So we'll have better podcasts. You've reached the nadir of the football season, so it's, you know, that's why we had a lot of Quetzalcoatl and camera tricks of Lord of the Rings on today's show. If you have a favorite cinema photography trick that you'd like to discuss, you can do so on our blog at bbillsmny.wordpress.com, or you can email us a link to a video about that, which would be at bbillsmny@gmail.com. What else? We got Twitter, bbillsmny on Twitter. We got a Facebook page, facebook.com/bbillsmny. iTunes, you search Buffalo Bills maybe next year. In Google, you could look all that up. We're doing Google Hangouts for these podcasts, and hopefully we'll get around to doing some video ones for you guys, because it's nothing more interesting than watching us do this.
with my Wisconsin field background.
And you can
backlit maybe call and Frank's bedroom.
Yeah, maybe my cat will jump up in the frame and do something weird. Who knows?
Now, that would be the first cat on our podcast, because I believe my parents' cat, PJ, has made an appearance on this podcast.
PJ
before.
Has showed up, and definitely my cats have interrupted Scott talking. Like, they jump up on the table sometimes, but they don't really get on camera. So we'll have to see if we can incorporate them. Did I forget anything? Are we covered?
I feel like we hit the incognito. I think we got everything.
Any quick thoughts on Evander Kane? I'm excited. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. I think they gave up a little bit much, the Sabres, but tonight's a good battle, Sabres-Devils. I think it's 1-0 in the second period right now, which is what you would expect out of these two teams.
1-0 Devils or Sabres?
Devils. Not that it matters, but that
it doesn't matter.
It matters. It does not. It matters matter. A little. I mean, but I'd like Buffalo to clinch this top spot and then be.
I like our definition of top spot bottom. Is actually bottom spot.
Yeah, they might have overpaid a little, but you know what? The Bills had just gotten paid. It was payday. They were feeling a little flush, and it's not going to hurt them in the long run that they overpaid a little for Evander Kane. I don't think that's going to be what undoes them. I don't think they'll be looking
back. That's because you're recorded saying that right now. So when Tyler Myers becomes the next Phil Housley, you know.
Well, if he becomes the next Phil Housley, great. As long as Evander Kane becomes, like, you know, the next great winger.
Yes.
Like, if he can score 30 goals a year, no one's going to look back. They're going to be like, that's fine.
I think he'll score 30 a year. He's a good guy. He's a good talent. Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, that was our little hockey segment. There you go. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back, my guess, next month. I think we'll be back sometime in March, and we'll do some of that stuff. So stay warm, and have a good end of February and beginning of March, everyone. Later. I'm Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm gone, man. I'm checked out. I'm so sorry. I know.
I'm Paul.
Later, skaters.
Stop the podcast.
And I'm done with you. It's over. Oh, here. Let's do. You know what I'll do? We'll do this, and then we'll say goodbye. All right. And then we're done. Do. Maybe next year. So we have 10,723 downloads.
All right.
Total. And the last time I checked, it was 10,472. So 300 downloads. Like, since the last time we posted the podcast. So that means we got like 300 people, like 280 people listening. So, or at least we did. We probably have about 6 people that are going to listen after this
right.
one. Please forgive us. I apologize. We'll even at least have better vamping next time. I'll do a better job. I've fallen down completely. So thank you so much for listening.
And, yes, thank you. Thank you, Grant and Steven and Tom and Porn Bots, especially.
All you porn bots, you beautiful porn bots. For Scott and Paul, I am Frank. Have a good night, everyone. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
No, I can't find the window to close it.
Why not?